Hello and welcome back to the Cinecope podcast. I'm Connell.
I'm Billy.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Jake.
Today we're discussing a few films that we screened for our recent film festival project of ours for our university courses. So starting off, my chosen film was screened on day two of the festival, and it was Nosferatu from 1922. What do people think of this?
I liked it more the second time around than the first time I saw it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it benefits from being watched properly in a cinema and, like, not first thing in the morning
in a random bitter cold classroom.
Freezing cold classroom. Yeah, exactly that.
How did the atmosphere, didn't it, in that class?
To be fair, I think mine was, the way I watched it was even worse, because, like, back in 2023 for the course, I watched about half of it up until it cuts to Hutter standing out on, like, a veranda or something. And then I went away to America for a week. And then I came back and I was like, well, the lesson's passed now, so I'm not going to bother watching the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And then it came to the year after and Robert Eggers' Nosferatu was coming out. So I was like, oh, I'll finally watch the original. And I was like, I can't really be arsed to watch the first half again. So I skipped up to where I was up to and then I watched all of that half. So basically I had a year-long gap in between it. So
that's
one
way to do it, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the main reason why I ended up like putting it on, just because of the new one coming out. I'm yet to see that though.
Yeah,
really?
Same.
Yeah, I'm yet to see it.
I saw it in 35mm at the Tyneside. I didn't love the film, but it looked really good on 35mm.
Mm-hmm. There you go, there's that film grain coming back in the conversation again. Yeah.
Do love me film grain, like. I don't know, like the thing of it, like, which I really like is just, like, I never would be into silent films, but I think this one just makes it better for being silent. It's just like the eeriness atmosphere.
I think the copy that they had, like the more modern remastered version of it, had a more interesting score as well. And I think like the title cards were a lot more eye catching as well.
Yeah.
So I think it depends on the version as well, because on top of having the year gap between it, I did watch it on like a really terrible copy on YouTube.
Yeah.
With like an ad break for Vermittly in the middle of it, so.
Yeah. It's one of them weird things though, isn't it? Because it feels like a film that you shouldn't be watching, like, and because it's quite famous and well-known now, but because so few of those films from that era have survived in anywhere near as good quality as that one has, you know, and it looks, still looks so good. And it, like, I mean, it's old, you know, you can tell it's from way back when, but it's aged a lot better than a lot of films from that era, because it's got like a proper plot, even though it's ripped off from a book that they didn't own. Mm. It's got like really cool makeup and quite decent special effects for what it is.
For the time, yeah.
And, you know, and you can tell what's going on. It's not like really confusing and daft. It's like, it's a proper feature length film. It's a film, believe it or not. It's a film,
it's
everyone.
Film.
It's an actual film. Yeah, it's like, it's, no, it, I think it works really well. And it was, seeing it in the cinema did, I liked it a lot more the second time, I think.
With the survivability as well, it's remarkable with how, I think Bram Stoker actually tried to go around and get all the copies of it destroyed.
It was his widow, George, actually, who tried to get it there. All destroyed, but I can't remember how many remained. I think it was like one or two of these.
I do prefer like the American Dracula that came out about a decade later with Lugosi, but there was a lot more merit to Nosferatu this time around when I watched it. What about you, Matthew? I know you're a bit choicey.
Yeah, I'm a bit sort of iffy on it. I feel like when you've seen it once, at least for me, I'd seen it once and I didn't have any desire to watch it again. But maybe it was because I watched it in a classroom. And I think when we watched it for the first time, didn't one of our mates fall asleep behind me?
Oh, yeah.
Someone
I was sat next to him.
And that kind of threw me off. That kind of ruined the immersion. When I'm trying to watch it, I'm like, God, he's scary. I'm like, what the
fuck? I was probably snoring, and I think everyone was just trying to think of ways to, like, try and do something funny before he wakes up, which massively distracted from what was going on screen.
But there's no one snoring in the cinema. That was good.
No, Reese was nearly there. Yeah, Reese was nearly there. I turned to the side and he looked like the album cover from the Bends Radio World.
Yeah, but I liked watching it in the cinema. I thought it was...
We we did gather a few of the opinions from like our.
It was the busiest one as well, I think.
I think that and American Werewolf were the busiest one.
Which is sort of makes sense because it's like the new one's coming out or has already came and went, but like it's a lot more in the public zeitgeist than it would have been like 10 years ago, I think.
Definitely.
Pretty cool.
Like it seems like there was a few who did actually find it. I have here, don't like it, a little boring, sleep time. I have a feeling we know who that is. Emily. But that's fair enough. But someone else put so different to like modern, like just modern cinema. It's just like great imagery, it says.
That's true.
Yeah, it is a bit. Like, well, it's quite rare, obviously, to have things on proper film nowadays. It's all just digital. Like you said earlier, that was George Lucas's film.
Bloody George Lucas, so I do agree. I think it's a good, it's like, it's one of those films that you need to watch. It's worth watching once. It's great. But it makes for really good, like, images, like you say. There's a lot of things in it where it's like, oh, that looks brilliant, and it would look great on a wall or in, like, a sort of
you know where
film
it would look
museum.
Great? SpongeBob.
There you go. Oh, yeah. Or you could always just, you know, throw them in a cartoon as well. But,
oh, yeah, I know. Genuinely, I was
then
looking,
who's flicking
I was
light?
Looking down for a second. I was doing that for 5 seconds, looked up, and he's going, yeah, in SpongeBob. And I was like, what
it's actually, it is crazy how, like, a load of people from our generation would know Nosferatu from SpongeBob, and not from Nosferatu.
It's like, strangely enough, that's not how I managed to find out about him. Mine was from my discovery was Iron Maiden's Number of the Beast music video, because it was just a homage to, like,
oh man, I should have brought in the cassette on that day as well, rather than just the day, but the 80s day.
Yeah, should have done
on cassette.
That's probably where I found him out from. But either way, I think we got a very mixed array of opinions on that one.
Yeah, I think it looks.
I think it was the most polarizing.
It looks cool, and it's like it's worth watching. I think it's another one where it's like it's better the less you know going in. So like, which almost because there's a new one and there was so much discourse around that, I think might have made it a little bit less, you know, elusive, cool, and like that weird, freaky, silent film that everybody kind of like. That's kind of all I knew it as for a really long time. Uh-huh. But yeah, it was really. I'm glad I saw it again, and I'm glad I saw it in those conditions. So
yeah,
it was worthwhile.
The second film we're going to be talking about was not my pick. It was Reese's pick, but he is currently ill, so I'm stepping in as the resident, I don't know, monster horror aficionado. His pick was An American Werewolf in London by John Landis from 1981. So what did you guys think about that one?
I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Has anyone seen Reese since he went to the slaughtered lamb, actually? Like, I mean,
all the ports of a big dog going on the social media, I'm a bit worried.
You know, because he just said he's ill, but he didn't really say any symptoms, so,
He should be fine.
Didn't know there was a slaughtered lamb in Shields.
There is, yeah, to change.
Maybe he's seen visions of the Muppets.
Exactly. I loved it as well. I've seen it a few times before, but it's one of my favourite horror films ever made. So
you know what? Yeah, it's brilliant.
You know what? Sort of. This is like, not. I'm not saying, oh, this is my favourite part. I was really getting into the the opening 10 minutes, and I was like, God, this is really setting the scene. And then am I going mad? It was Rick Mayall.
Rick Mayall.
Yeah, he didn't say a word. He just sat there.
Yeah, yeah. Uh huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you know
Jake
how
was
that came
to me
about?
Before it started.
No.
Well, apparently John Landis, because he filmed a lot of stuff like around, you know, in London, and obviously he was there sort of for the film.
Yeah.
But he went to, it was a comedy club, it might have been the Comedy Store or one of the big ones in London, and Rick Mayall and Aidan Edmondson were there performing before they'd done The Young Ones and become quite famous. And he saw them, thought they were hilarious, told the two of them, I'm shooting a film and I need some extras and I'd love it if you were there. And Aidan Edmondson didn't believe him. He thought he was just bullshitting, so he didn't go. But Rick Mayall actually went, and then he ended up as an extra
in the film.
And then went on to become the really famous Rick Mayall that we all know now. But yeah, so that is him very much. Yeah. So it is weird though.
Yeah, you've got your you've got your classic Rick Baker practical effects.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Up there.
Really top good. Of his game, really, with yeah. that, I think.
Happy when he turns is unbelievable.
It's so clever, yeah. isn't it? Because it's like, it's. I think it's one of those things where even like I love special effects films, but sometimes you watch them and you're like, oh, that's a great special effect, but the effects in that film are so good, you yeah. don't even, you forget it's actually practical. You literally just are sold that he's turned into a werewolf. You're just looking and thinking, oh my God, like, and you can just imagine how painful
that's
it must
a scream.
Be.
Yeah.
It's like the screaming, the agony, and like, how, it's just oh my God. Imagining how that would feel. Like, you don't even really think, like, don't get me wrong, I love Universal's The Wolfman, but it is literally just a guy and he just gets hairy.
Yeah,
but
it's like, just like the way it just fades,
it
in,
just
between,
fades
in between different
into being
practical effects.
Like, a hairy guy, yeah. Whereas this, you see, like, how his yeah. body actually morphs, like, into the shape of a dog, and you're like, oh my God,
it's
you
the
know, like,
bones
but
cracking
with that, with the mention. With you mentioning Wolfman, how they mention it in the film, I feel like I had a much more of an appreciation for it now, because
yeah.
I think before this I hadn't seen it for about 5 or 6 years, but now that I am who I am and I've seen these films now.
You are the Wolfman.
Yeah, I am. I was the Wolfman of Halloween.
That's true. Yeah, you are.
But yeah, I was picking up on a lot more of the references, all the techniques and the homages, and I just had a much better time with it than
well,
I did.
Yeah.
I already liked it, but I liked it a lot more this time, much like with Nosferatu.
I was the same, because I always just saw it as like, oh, it's like one of the best 80s horror films, but I never quite noticed how much it does pay respect to like the sort of classics and the more well-established horror stuff before. And I put it about it on Letterboxd. It's a little thing, but I like the way none of them really know what he's talking about when he's talking about Lon Chaney Jr.'s
yeah,
Wolfman.
That was really cool.
It's like they all, because he's in London, they all think he's talking about Hammer, like Curse of the Werewolf, which is exactly what happens. Like whenever
that's a really cool little thing to do.
Like whenever I talk about Universal Monsters with my parents, they always just like, or anyone from this country, they just think you're talking about Hammer. So
I know,
like,
welcome to my world. It's annoying.
There you go. It's a little thing, but I like, it's details like that, though. I think it's because they are quite, they're still very human characters, and I really like all the characters, and it's just, you know, it's got that sort of dated, oh yes, we're all British, this is what we, you know, it's like, it's got that kind of thing to it still, but it's...
I think you're right there with saying like, oh, it's in the details. I think the whole film can be described, it's in the details, it's in the transformation,
yeah.
it's in the... Yeah. It's in the characters. It's just brilliant.
It is, yeah. It's really good.
We had some really good feedback from that as well. I don't think anyone really had a bad thing to say about it. One of them was, my favourite. So good to see it again on the big screen. I will always value the film as a true classic and the first horror to be recognised by the Academy to win an Oscar and recognise the fantastic makeup to put the horror genre back on the map and get the recognition it deserves. Thank you. Thank you for your feedback as well.
I can't argue with any of that. Like, it is a good point. It just feels like a classy horror film, I think. It's got that thing where it feels like a horror film you could show people who aren't really that into horror but just love films. You could be like, oh, well, this is like one of the best examples of how to do it. And
this is class. Watch it now.
Literally, babe.
Sit down.
Pretty much.
Bring out the tape again.
Oh, no.
I can't even remember what it was.
I don't know what it was. I have to think about it.
It was Labyrinth, wasn't it?
He was talking about
Labyrinth in another episode.
Yeah, Labyrinth.
If anyone remembers the exact line, you win £10. But what you've just said there...
You've got to pay £10 postage to get the £10, though.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
You don't win anything. It's actually a scam. But what you said about there, about people who aren't really into horror enjoying it, I'm not big into horror myself.
Yeah.
And I still loved this. I thought it was great.
Well, it's a good balance because it's like, it's really funny as well.
Yeah,
like,
funny.
I mean, John Landis was more known for doing comedy than horror.
Yeah.
And I think it's really, really impressive that he was able to still keep... like his funny writing style, but then have, you know, it also be quite a tense, scary, you know, really cool film that delivers. And the music as well. I feel like the soundtrack adds a big part of it. It's almost like proto Edgar Wright techniques, having that whole, every song on the soundtrack some way subtly like alluding to like moons and werewolves.
He's just going through a songbook. Moon, write that down.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Well, thanks to Reese for that pick. It was probably the most popular, and I think probably had the best turnout.
We'll
so, Reese, wherever you are these days,
God rest.
Yeah, God rest. Hopefully, you turn back from a werewolf soon. thank you for the thank you for the pick.
Right, scooting backwards a bit to day one of the festival, we focused on 80s cult classic films, mine being Police Story from 1985. I noticed you guys praising it after it finished. Can't share your overall thoughts.
Fucking ridiculous.
It was wild.
It's so fun.
I absolutely loved it. Like, it was obviously the only Jackie Chan films I'd actually seen beforehand was the Rush Hour trilogy.
Which are great films, and they are great, right, yeah.
But I feel like, in comparison of, like, in terms of the martial arts kind of stuff, Rush Hour is a lot tamer compared to what happened here. Like, honestly, like, all the stunts, I thought, was just, it's just mental for being able to do that.
You see that Golden Harvest logo, you know you're in for a treat.
Exactly, yeah. Me. It's unbelievable. The bit when he's, my favourite, like, you mentioned the stunts, is, you know, when he's just left, he just leaves his apartment.
Yeah.
And the stopper's car, and he's flipping from the car.
Like, literally,
I'm sat in my chair going, Jesus
Christ. He like crashes through about three windscreens in the space of like 5 minutes. He's just getting hurled all over. but it's the fact, it's like, I think it's like, you know, there's a lot of martial arts films out there that have great stunts and great choreography. But the thing I really love about the Jackie Chan ones is he has this way of like using the environment. So like that car fight is a perfect example because they're all fighting each other, but he's like using the car as like a weapon. So he'll like open the door, like deflect, and but it all just goes so quickly. Yeah. Yeah. So like, it's like, you know, it's like watching ballet, really. It's so impressive how
violent
it all
ballet.
That's what it's like. It is, it's like, it all is synced up perfectly and goes so smooth, but also looks really brutal and spur of the moment at the same time. Like, and
what goes to what comes to my mind is Rumble in the Bronx as well.
That's a great
when he's
example.
Just kicking about on like the it's like a water speeder or something, and he's just fighting on that, and then suddenly he starts driving around New York streets on this massive, like,
it's like a hovercraft.
Yeah, it's
thing,
like a water hover.
It's like some sort of,
and then in the Armor of God, when he's got his stupid action figure car that comes with all the little special effects, and he's using the environment there and everything.
That's true. Well, even Rumble in the Bronx, that's the one that has the really cool fight in the supermarket, isn't it? That ends up like knocking the whole apartment block down or something like that. Yeah. It's how it goes from being like a normal supermarket and then just basically destroying the entire environment. And Police Stories, you know, that the whole mall fight,
I'm about to say, that just seems to be a trend with stuff where Jackie Chan will end up fighting in some sort of like retail
normal
facility.
Yeah, exactly. You'll just take you to like a place you're familiar with, and then it'll like be the most insane badass fight you've ever seen. Glass getting smashed everywhere. The way he like always uses the slow-mo as well. I love that. Where it's like, he knows a shot looks good, and he either makes you watch it a couple of times or does it again in slow-mo.
Back about 12 times. He makes you see every bone.
I almost die for this. You're going to watch it a million times.
Honestly, it was that thing afterwards when they did the deleters and the blue.
That's one of the best things about Jackie Chan's films, that almost all have that on the end.
The little credit scenes with the outtakes. You just see how brutally like injured they all get, and it's
gotta respect the people he fights as well. Jackie Chan gets a lot of credit, and he deserves it, obviously. But the people he's like, he's fucking messing people up. He throws that guy down the escalator.
There's a guy who gets thrown down the escalator, and there's a guy who gets thrown over through like a garden display, and that's not even Jackie Chan. That's just like another guy. It's like they just had a massive stable of all these crazy people willing to do all these like fights and stunts as if it's just nothing, you know. And these films that came out with like one of them films like once every month, you know. There's like hundreds of them, like, and they all got really, really good sort of stunt work and choreography. It's so cool.
I think I'm thinking about the guy who was like, when he gets on the motorbike and he drives him through all the glass while running him over with a bike. I'm thinking, bloody hell, like this. Like, he's just got a tire mark, right?
He's already dead.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it is. It's funny, you know, it has that sort of balance of his crackerjack humour
I like the phone call bit where it was tangling all
that's up. That's hilarious.
It's my favourite out of the whole lot, but it sort of, obviously I wasn't there for it, but it was gutting to hear that like hardly anybody actually came out to it. I think it was the best film by like a country mile.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Obviously, I'm biased because it was my film. But I was looking at feedback, but I think this is more Purple Rain.
Yeah,
feedback.
So was mine.
There's
Princeton Police Story.
There's not a single bit of feedback from Police Story I can give you, but everyone who was there massively enjoyed themselves.
Yeah,
and
Bill Gunn had a good time, didn't
he?
So
did.
What more
he
can you ask for?
Yeah. What more can you ask for?
Shout out to Jake's granddad. I almost like listener.
There you go. If you're listening, thanks for coming. Police Story. It was it was great. I was really happy with that. And just seeing it on the big screen, even if nobody turned up, it was still a great experience and not something I would have been able to do otherwise. So. Yeah, glad more people have seen the glory that is Jackie Chan's Police Story.
To finish off, I screened a film that's more known for its soundtrack than the film itself, that being Purple Rain from 1984, starring Prince himself. Did it cause you sorrow and pain, or did it make you go crazy? But Billy, you weren't there for it, were you?
No, I was not.
I wasn't there for half of it. I got fucking locked out. locked out of the building.
I had a lovely time. I don't know about you.
I had to leave early, but I saw it before with you.
Does that mean I'm the only one here who actually made it all the way through Purple Rain?
I was not there, but I got the idea from Let's Go Crazy being baked into my brain from the amount of times I was posting it for Mark.
That was like the theme of the entire film festival, wasn't it? It was the theme tune.
It got to the point where I was watching American Werewolf, and then when he's chasing that fella through there, I was like, where's the song?
It was the same with Police Story when he's hanging on with the umbrella.
I'm just thinking,
let's go crazy. Is it umbrella or was it just...
I was going to watch it last night, but it's basically not on any streaming without having to pay for it. And on Internet Archive, it's either I've got to watch it in Spanish or I've got to watch it on a VHS quality.
We'll watch it in Spanish.
Which I don't really fancy.
In Spanish would be hilarious.
My love of Prince is very low, so I wasn't going to put myself through that at 11 o'clock at night.
I reckon you would have liked Morris Day, though. He's quite funny.
Morris Day is like the best part of the whole
He's got like an arch nemesis, and he's like, it's him and his mate, and like, oh no, they're both a bit mad.
I still can't get, the thing that throws me off about that film, even now that I've seen it twice, is the fact that it's like sort of, it's sort of trying to pretend that it's like fiction, but the only issue with that is the only one who has their name changed is Prince. Like, Prince calls himself the Kid, but every other character is like a real artist. So Morris Day and The Time were an actual band.
Oh. It was Prince's side, I think.
It was like, exactly that. Yeah. So it was like this, so you get this weird sort of, I don't even know how you could describe it, but it's like the fact that it's like, yeah, it's like a sort of semi-fictional story, but all of the characters are basically played by Prince's real band, who aren't actors. Prince isn't an actor either. I think Apollina, who I thought was just a character, she's got the same name. She was a real performer.
Like, what a name.
Apollina, exactly.
Well, even the woman says it this hour, she goes, Apollina, really?
Yeah.
And then she's like, you laughing at my bastard name.
But Morris Day is like, that's the thing, it's just so odd that he's like this sort of demented little gremlin in the film.
He's also just
a real guy who's just Morris Day, front man of The Time. Like, because I watched the film and I was like, God, Morris Day, that name sounds well familiar. And then they were like, and now Morris Day in The Time. I was like, I swear he's got like a band. And it was like, Morris Day in The Time. And I was like, that was it, The Time. And then I was like, I got a minute. So it's just the actual band is like his rival, the bad guy character. Yeah. It's so weird.
I love his introduction, like, as in, not like in the title sequence, but like where he says to Prince, why don't you stay a while, see how it's done, and then when they get on and they perform Jungle Love, I'm like, that is a cool villain introduction. Cool.
Like, and he's a horrible man.
He's a horrible
guy. At the end, he's like, how's the family? And then I'll start laughing at him. And then what he said that messed up all of his mates walk away, and he's still there going, I feel a bit bad now.
It's the fact he went like that. It's like instantly.
It's like the switch when he realised, oh, actually, I shouldn't have said that.
It's like, I'm pretty sure this was just, majority of it, like, was Prince and all of his bandmates of multiple projects or whatever who were just coming together to like do this one thing. Like, even I can't remember the name of the band that was in the film, but It was a guy who sort of had the bandana around his head. He was on like lead guitar and
Rambo.
Vocals. Rambo.
Just scream.
I remember him as like
Yoko.
Yoko Rambo.
John and Rambo. The plastic Rambo band.
But he was I'll just call him Rambo because I don't know his name, but like
I know the one you're on about.
Yeah, I think he joined like the Revolution later on because I remember him as the guy from the Little Red Corvette music video who did the got to slow down bit, just that bit.
Yeah.
Like, but I'm like, yeah, that, I just say it's all Prince's.
It's not a terrible song. I don't mind that one. I don't mind Raspberry Beret, and I don't mind the stuff from Batman.
Yeah.
But like I said before, if it comes on shuffle, I tend to skip them.
Well, yeah, Little Red Corvette's a great song. I think the thing is, though, that is a great point mentioning the music video, because like, like I love this film, but it's very, very obviously made for MTV.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of music video fodder where it's cutting away. Like, you know, it's
Sting's in the corner.
What's all this?
He's sitting on the piano like he did in Rockstar.
But yeah, it's like it's one of them things where I think it's like, especially the When Doves Cry bit. Like, I'm not even certain if that was used as the music video, but it just, you could just imagine being in a Hard Rock Cafe and like moments from the from that
cry?
Film.
Yeah, you know, start like balling the
eyes. Doves did. Doves they were gutted.
Should we read some feedback?
Why not?
Yeah.
This one says, a good film, seen for the first time, very of its day, the technology worked well. I don't know what that means. Prince lives, we sleep. I'm not gonna say about technology works. someone else is going to have to tell
them.
They
put the glasses on and everyone's just Prince.
It's a living nightmare. And then the next bit of feedback, there's like three bits on here. The second bit of feedback just says, watched Purple Rain.
That's awesome.
Quality.
Yeah. And the third one says, great film choice.
This is a good one. Yeah, you'll like that.
Thanks, Mom.
Caught me off guard. Full stop. Great physicality. Full stop. Great physicality. Full stop. He is horrible and deserves all the bad things that happens to him. Full stop. Good time though. I'm not sure.
When he says he's horrible, are we talking about?
I'm presuming they're talking about Prince, as in like he's horrible and deserves all the bad. I mean, he does like beat his girlfriend.
Yeah, it was like, either him or Morris Day. Like,
Morris Day's horrible, but Prince isn't any better. Like,
yeah,
really,
it might be
to be honest. But
oh my God.
Yeah, that one gave us a laugh. But which is a fair point. It is like, you know, it makes him look really cool. It doesn't really paint him in the greatest light, but I think it's. He's probably trying to do that because he's
it's the Beatles effect where it's like a music film, but it's like a heightened reality where they're basically playing themselves, but like an exaggerated version.
Exactly that.
Like how Ringo's just like a screwball idiot in all of the films and cartoons, when in real life he might be now with his MS Paint drawings and Peace and Love, but
Peace and Love.
Maybe not at the time.
Yeah, well that's it though, isn't it? It's like, it's quite funny because they do create, like, it's just strange how they manage to create sort of, it is like a fiction, but it also isn't, like, you know, I don't really know how true any of the things that
I don't know
in the film, you know.
It's like the distinction where it's the Beatles ones where they're all playing themselves, but it's like a heightened version, and then the Elvis ones where he's not playing himself most of the time. He's
so
just like
strange.
He's just a fella who decides to start
who's
singing
like,
at times.
Yeah.
I say that I've only seen King Creole.
I've seen
but,
one of them. Have you not seen J-Lo's Rock?
I haven't seen J-Lo's
Rock. Got the maddest opening 5 minutes. He fucking kills someone.
Yeah, he kills. I read this. He just kills someone.
Jesus.
From what I gather, Purple Rain's somewhere in the middle of them, where it's like a heightened reality of them playing themselves and a musician playing a character who sings.
I see what you mean.
Well, I think that that I can get away with. But the fact that, like, with Prince, it makes sense. It's just the fact that the Revolution are there as well, and you can very clearly tell, especially with, like, Wendy and Lisa are quite convincing, because I think they, you know, they're quite convincing as actors, and the way the sort of their characters make sense, where they're like, you know, they work on the music and they want to get more credit. I don't know. They probably didn't do that in real life, but it's the other two guys.
You'd
that
be surprised. I'd like to think so for a band.
I want the credit. Ladies.
But they're like, but them two other guys who don't really say anything, especially the guy who's like the keyboard player with
like the sparks.
Who always has the shades and like the bright hair, and he doesn't say a word. Yeah. He does not seem like somebody who really knew what was going on. He just seems like he was like, well, the band's supposed to be here, I guess I'll go as well.
It just showed the level of importance because they left the drummer, the keys guy, and rhythm, I want to say, like, or the bassist, maybe. Yeah, the bassist.
Yeah, yeah, I know, because like, I'm still not 100% sure who did what, but I mean, I love the fact that they didn't change the name, The Revolution. I think that's a really cool name for a band. Anyway.
I think that's all the 60-year span of the silver screen we have time for in this episode. Now we pose the question to you. If you had an opportunity to put on a film festival, which films would you screen and what would the theme around it be? Get in touch with us at cineclub.podcast@sparksunderland.com.
And make sure to check out all of our socials, including @thecineclubpodcast_spark on Instagram, the.cineclub.podcast on TikTok, or The Cineclub Podcast on Facebook. It'd be great to drive up engagement, and also they're all a good way to keep up to date when the new episodes are out, so have a look.
As always, this episode was recorded and produced by us, the Sunderland University students, as well as being edited by Emily Main. Special thanks to Steve Cannon, Barbara Sadler and Richard Berry. A reminder that our four Film Fest facilitators this week have been me, Jake,
me, Matthew,
me, Connell,
and me, Billy.
This has been a Cineclub production for Spark. Thanks for listening.